Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 13, with myself, The Last Skeptic, featuring my very special guests, Sway and Tom Ravenscroft. As always, there is fuckloads of swearing. It's recorded in my front room, you know the drill. Thank you to my guests, and big shout out to Seb White for recording the show. Enjoy. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 13, with my very, very special guests and dear old friends of mine, Tom Ravenscroft and Sway. Wow, this is like a great honor for me and two really good friends of mine that I haven't actually seen in a while. So
yeah, no, it's been ages.
A long fucking time. So this is going to be great. I can actually just catch up with, as Sway just said, with a perfect excuse for me to just drink fuckloads.
Basically.
So, you know, nothing's changed. So firstly, Sway, how are you, man? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm really well, man. Thank you. I'm good, man. Just living, you know me, enjoying life. Working, yeah, I mean, just trying to create a lot of different opportunities and just explore, you know.
Yeah,
I know it sounds really vague, but
it's super vague, but also it's kind of true, because you've transitioned from focusing on rap, focusing on production, to doing the label boss the situation, and so tell us about the cipher, like, you know, break it down for people.
So basically, it's always been that. Like, you know, I've always been doing the same thing. I've just had a spotlight on different things at different times.
Yeah.
So for example, like, you know, from the very beginning, I was more or less like spearheading the movement that I was in. Like when I was in, I mean, you know, back in the day when I was in a group called One, it was like a 11 member crew.
Wow.
Even though I was like the second from youngest, I was still like the kind of like spearhead of the crew. I was doing a lot of the organization, and you know, when it came to releasing our first product, I was kind of like putting that together, finding out where you press up CDs, finding out about artwork, who the DJs were. So I was always doing that. But what it was with this whole Sway thing, honestly speaking, I really wanted to, like, I enjoyed rapping, but I really wanted to always have like a label. Yeah, I mean, and I wanted to sign other artists, but
there's power in that as well.
Man, but they weren't as good as me, man.
So you had to do it.
Yeah,
man,
sign yourself and be done there.
Basically, I was the guinea pig that blew up. It's true, but at the same time, after a while, I started realizing that although I enjoyed rapping, I really also enjoyed discovering talent and developing talent. And I really enjoyed the process of watching something that's so rough and undeveloped turn into something and blossom. Yeah. I like being a part of that process. I like guiding that process. I like creating that process. So, you know, I've met a lot of artists like really early in their careers and kind of been a part of their journeys early, and they've gone on to do great things.
Because a lot of people, you know, look to you for advice as well, like, because they've seen your career and like everything that you've done, and know that you know, they come to you for words of wisdom.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's sometimes a case of, you know, trial and error. And I've always been someone that's never been scared to try things. So, you know, fortunately for me, and unfortunately at the same time, is I've been first in a lot of stuff when it comes to like the whole urban music scene. It was kind of like, you hear about it now because I don't really put the story out like out there like that. But you hear people say, okay, oh man, Stormzy, first unsigned rapper on Jules Holland.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then you'll hear like, oh, first artist to win a BET award.
Mm.
Again, like there's just so many things that I was first in, but...
But we should also clarify for the listeners out there, that I know you're inferring it, but you did both of those things first.
Yeah, exactly.
And like that's crazy to think, you know, like, and it's so important for people to know that as well, because it's very important also for the history of UK rap in this country, a UK rap, a term that has evolved and changed and had different connotations to it over the years. But
I don't know how important it is, really.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Because people wake up and they have breakfast and they live their life. It's nothing to do with...
But it's still history. Like the same way that we looked at the history of whatever it was of US rap, or the same way, Tom, that you might look at that, you got someone on your show and you'll look back at everything they've done and every act that have come before them. It's very important. I feel like the history is...
I think if people want to find out, they'll find out. The evidence is all there. If you want to go back in time and talk about, you know what I mean, like the whole Mobo thing, like first unsigned artist to win a Mobo, and there's so many different things we were first at, and at the time we didn't know we were first at because we just kind of created the opportunity. If anybody really wants to do the research and find out and do the history, they should. I don't really think it's my role to constantly shove that down people's I hear it all the time, like, oh, this guy was the first to do that. Most of the time I say, okay, that's cool. I mean, it's just like, I'm not gonna be, no, I was the first. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already on top of other things. I'm already,
I think you're fine.
You know what I mean? I'm already first doing something new.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So by the time they get to that stage, they could be the first at that, and I'll be like, no.
I like
being ahead of the game. I like thinking ahead, you know.
Yeah, and that's great what you've done with KSI as well. It's another thing. You've taken someone with a huge fan base on YouTube, and you've taken them into a different realm.
Yeah,
and you know, kind of, I guess, to tell me about KSI. Tell everyone about KSI. You know, Tom, I don't know if you have had experience listening to KSI.
All right, so here's the thing. Yeah, when I first released my my album, this is my demo. It was a very kind of new time for independent rap albums, like having some kind of commercial appeal, you know? And, I didn't get a lot of massive support, like from mainstream radio and some mainstream TV on that process. And then when I did my second album, although I was really like close with Akon at the time and it was the whole Convict Music thing, we're still the same team. I'd never signed anything officially to Akon, so I was still working the record like an independent artist, but the quality of the music in terms of like the visuals, and there was a lot more money and a lot more investment behind it. And that second album, it didn't really perform the way that we all anticipated, especially based on the perception. So I went for a kind of quiet period for a moment for personal reasons, and also, you know, just to kind of regather my thoughts and understand who I was. And it was in 2010, I was kind of like, look, the only thing I haven't done in my career really is understand what it's like to be a signed artist.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So we went around looking for a deal. And at that point, it was kind of like, you know, it was funny because a lot of the record labels I kind of turned down beforehand.
Mm.
And my press agent, big up to Ben, he was like, he made a massive deal out of the fact that independent artist turns down this label, turns down that label. I didn't realize how many people I'd been pissing off. You know what I mean? Like, so when it actually came time for me to do my deal, everyone was like, oh, you're here now.
Yeah.
Like, it was that kind of scenario. So I was just like, yo, I'll take any deal, man. I just want to know what it's like to be a signed artist. So I had my idea. I had my agenda. Like, I wasn't there to like, okay, I want to be signed forever.
Yeah.
And I've built up this whole thing about being independent, learned certain things about the industry, understood how to develop an act, been involved in developing so many acts that I've done well. I wasn't there to sign forever. I was just like, let's do a singles deal. So Freebeat took up a singles deal. And the first single I released, you know, a lot of people was kind of like, you know, this ain't, this ain't gonna do nothing. The time was done. Like it was like I was kind of caught in an era where people were like, even you know, with Kano doing amazingly well now, he was kind of trapped in that space. Yeah. All of us were kind of like,
with people that didn't know how you were gonna sell records
anymore.
It was
Tiny Tempest time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was that kind of generation. It was like, you guys, we respect you guys, but you've had a moment. And then we dropped Still Speeding, and that went top 20. And that was actually my first record that got a Radio 1 playlist.
Sick.
Like throughout my whole career, yeah. I'd released like 7 singles and never got a playlist. I got a playlist and then I went top 20.
Sick.
And then at that same time, it's like, I was always like trying to discover new artists and new talents and move with the times and try and merge my sound with whatever was current. You know what I mean? I always wanted to be ahead of it. So I was speaking to a friend of mine and he was like, you need to work with Dr. P because the dubstep thing was big at the time. And I was like, I checked out Dr. P, but at the same breath, I came across Flux Pavilion, who was another person suggested.
Very sick.
And I listened to both of them and I thought Dr. P was sick, but Flux had the hip hop thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was still hip hop. And I was like, proper, like, I'm going to get a beat from this
guy. He ended up doing the Kanye record.
See, even before that. Yeah, so this is
crazy.
The thing. So I hit up Flux and I was like, yo, this is Sway, blah, blah, blah. Sway, blah, blah. He was a massive fan.
Mm.
But I can't do a record with you at the moment. I'm in uni. So like, I'm in my third year. Like, come on, man. How long is it going to take to do a record? I'm coming to your university. So I actually went to his university dorm. You know what I mean? Sat down and went through some beats. And that's when he played me the I Can't Stop. And I was like, this guy's going to go. You know what I mean? Like, he's technically.
And that's the beat that ended up on Watch the Throne.
No. So basically, he produced a record for me and I did a record for him. And I had that in my back pocket.
Yeah.
So I just done all the paperwork on that and kind of negotiated it. I had it. So after I'd gone top 20 with Still Speeding, the label kind of like, what's your next move? And I was like, this. And it was Level Up, produced by Flux Pavilion. At the time, Flux Pavilion was just around the whole Watch the Throne thing. And every rapper was trying to get to Flux Pavilion, but he was locked off.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not working with nobody.
Yeah.
So we dropped that record and that went top 10. So I was like,
sick.
You know what I mean? Lads, sick. We got the momentum back now. You know what I mean? Like, let's start this label thing. Mm-hmm. Let's build it. Let's make it mean something. And so we kind of re-galvanized the whole Decipher thing. That was the original camp. The original three of us re-galvanized. And I was looking for somebody to be a part of it. You know, I didn't know what kind of artist. And I kept bumping into this guy. I bumped into him on two occasions. He was in the studio, but you know when you meet somebody and there's something about them, there's a kind of aura about them.
Yeah.
So I asked this guy, I said, well, so what do you actually do? Because I bumped into you in a few studios. And he's like, I'm a rapper. So I'm like, right, cool, play me some records. So he played me some records. And then one of the records, he started singing. And I was like, you're not a rapper. Like, you're good. Don't get me wrong. Because I'm always the best, innit? You know what I mean? So you're good. But your singing voice is amazing. Yeah. I want you to jump on this record for me that I'm doing with Kano. Mm-hmm. It's a remake of Dr. Dre's Still Dre.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Still Sway and Kane.
Right.
It was me and Kano. And that was Tiggs the author. So we signed him. It was the first act we signed to this new Decipher situation. We released an EP for him. And then all of a sudden you went into some mad bidding situation.
Yeah, big up Tiggs, man. You know
what I mean, where labels were after him. And then, so that happened. The same time with the Still Speeding record, I remember my views started going up like mentally. Like it was just like, it was kind of too good to be true. Mm. It was going up in like 20,000 a day at some point. And I was like, what's going on here? So I read the comments. All the comments was like, KSI Army, KSI sent me KSI. So what the hell is a KSI, man? I need to get one of those, man. You know what I mean? Like, whatever that is, you know what I mean? Because that's helping the views. So then I went and researched, and I was just there for hours, literally watching through this guy's videos. And he was using Still Speeding. Every time he'd score a goal on FIFA, he'd use Still Speeding.
That's
and he was
crazy.
Doing this kind of spoof type rapping.
Mm.
It was kind of like, I mean, it was dodgy, you know what I mean? But it was like, there was something there. There's a personality.
Yeah.
He had 2 million subscribers. You know what I mean? 2 million subscribers. So I hit him up And I was like, yo, Sway, to have a chat. He was like, oh shit, am I in trouble? I was like, nah, you're not in trouble. There's something we can do. You know what I mean? Like, we can, let's see what can happen with this. And then we ended up talking, and we ended up talking about just doing a record together for fun. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I can say it now because there's no comeback. I was trying to get out of my deal at that point because the whole single fig was, that's all it was supposed to be. They didn't understand my album. You know what I mean? The kind of album I wanted to release was more of a personal album. It was more like an affirmation. It wasn't something that, I wasn't trying to turn into Flo Rida. And the single thing, they wanted me to be Flo Rida. Yeah. And I've done too much lyrical stuff to be Flo Rida. So I was in a position where I was trying to get out of my deal. So kind of like as a compromise, I gave the label an EP, which was called the Wake Up EP. And then I put this record with Tiggs the author and KSI on the EP. The main track called Wake Up was produced by Zane Lowe. Nice package, you know what I mean? Put it all together. And then you could just see the power of KSI's involvement in the record.
Of course.
Just propelling it. I think it did it midweek in the top 40. Like, literally no announcement, no promo, no nothing. Midweek in the top 40. I was like, no way. Like, this is something. So we signed KSI. And we was like, all right, cool. It's going to take some time. Let's develop you. Like, let's get in the studio, come in. Let's, you know, coach the flow. Mm-hmm. Let's try and find your characteristics. We went through beats. Turkish sent a bunch of beats. And there was one beat in particular we're both into. Mind you, he's making a lot of money from YouTube at that point. Mm. And he had a Porsche. And
From YouTube?
Yeah, he had this
Porsche from YouTube.
He had a record called... he wanted to do a record called Lamborghini.
Yeah.
So we was writing the record together. Basically, he kind of had a serious moment where he was like, oh, Sway, man, like... you know, I've got this record about Lamborghini, but I drive a Porsche. it's not right. I was like, bro, it's hip hop. It's cool.
It doesn't matter.
A lot of people that make songs about things they don't have.
Of course.
You have a Porsche, it's not bad. So he calls me one time, he pulls up to the studio, he calls me one time, and he was like, oh yeah, look out the window. Bright orange Lamborghini. Bright orange, like proper, like the maddest color you've ever seen of a Lamborghini. And he's like, he's got a Lamborghini now. So we were like, all right, cool. This is
how
cool.
How old was he at this time?
I don't know, man. How old was JJ at the time? Maybe 19.
Looking to Turkish, 19.
So he had the Lamborghini. It was a fun time. We were having fun. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
And then, so now we're speaking to record labels about potentially, you know, KSI, you know, blah, blah, blah. We think he could be really big, you know what I mean? His subscribers are growing. And, you know, KSI was never coming into the game to try and be Nas. You know what I mean? Will Smith was more the model. Mm-hmm. You know, he wanted to have fun. He has talent for music. Like, nobody can rap and string a throw together.
Is he writing his bars as well?
We write together.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But recently he's been writing a lot of his own stuff. This is the honest truth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We write together, but...
it's collaborative,
No, but you've got me in your corner. Like, I write for rappers that don't even know I've been writing for them for years.
Shit.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Ghostwriter.
Yeah, but it's a different kind of... It's spiritual. You know what I mean? It's a different type of thing. But
The more drinks I have, the more testing questions I will have for you. You'll be like, oh shit, can I say that?
It's no problem, man. Look, anything I'm going to say to you in this podcast is based on truth. So it's there's only one truth. You know, there was a momentum there because of Tiggs the author. People were like, oh, we see kind of like what you guys did with Tiggs. You know what I mean? We see what you did with Still Speed and Level Up, blah, blah, blah. But nobody was biting at the KSI thing because it was for them, it was like, he's a YouTuber. He cannot make a record. Like, it doesn't matter that you're behind him. It's like, you can't take YouTube into the music world. And we was like, we had a long, there was a point where we were kind of like a few deals were interested and we really wanted to land him at a label because we felt like as a small independent, we needed the machine to take it where our vision really wanted to take it. So we had a discussion where we were like, look, let's release Lamborghini as a single and we could potentially risk messing up everything and proving them right, and maybe it won't work. But KSI was so excited about the record. We loved the record, and we were like, let's take away initially his biggest asset, which is YouTube. So we're not gonna put it on YouTube. Let's put it on Spotify, which is a streaming service, and show people that it's about the fan engagement, not just about him doing FIFA videos. He's a star. Wherever he's gonna go, people are gonna follow. So I went into Spotify. I had a meeting with the powers that be over there. Mm. I was like, I need to set up an artist account ASAP. You know what I mean? Mm. Who is it? KSI. Okay, has he released anything before? Not really. You know what I mean? Okay, cool. We're going to trust you on this. We're going to set up the account. We put out Lamborghini Mental. I think that was... I think it might have even gone in... did it pre-order in the top 20?
Fucking hell.
Mental. And then that's when the phone started ringing with all the record labels saying, how about that YouTube thing?
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you check his music video ratio to his, like, playing FIFA.
I know, videos, it's difficult to transfer those fans that are used to one thing into getting them into watching another thing. So it's a difficult thing to do.
I mean, yeah, and he's achieved it.
Yeah.
If you think 70 million views on a music video and his average on his FIFA videos is about 5 million, that's 65 million people, not that much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That are interested. He's just an all-round great guy. He's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
He listens to us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has great ideas of his own. We help facilitate that. And he's like a younger brother to me. So, you know what I mean? KSI is an amazing character, you know?
Big up KSI.
And so is Tiggs.
Tiggs is incredible. Like, he's just... I've got so many questions for you, Sway. I want to say hello to Tom, because I haven't said hello to you yet.
Hello. Sorry.
That's all right.
In the background.
No, that's fine. Tom, how are you, man? Talk to
me. I'm good. Oh, nothing as exciting as that. I want to just listen to you, Tom, more now. It's just like, you just do the whole thing.
No. You just have the
most... I just sat at home with my kids.
That's what I'm doing.
I just sat at home with my kids watching box sets.
The most beautiful radio voice in the history of radio.
Just all one tone.
It's perfect. That's all we want.
Mr. Monotone. Yeah, that's how it is.
How's it going with Six Music Friday nights, killing again?
Yeah, it's good. What are we doing? It's that time of year when all the festivals are starting up. So it's like...
God, I hate this time of year.
Yeah, do you know what? I really do.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of like eyeing up which ones I can get out of and which ones...
get out of.
Which ones we gotta do. So, yeah. The thing is, you go to all the festivals and you know what it's like. You're kind of sat with these kind of like makeshift studios and you're like... a lot of the time you're having to kind of take music that you wouldn't necessarily play.
Mm.
And I'm kind of thinking, I just want to be back in my studio in London playing records.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally they make you leave.
So do they have, I guess you have to play the records from people
that
are playing.
Yeah, you kind of have to play what you're given a little bit when you do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Some of it is wonderful.
Most of it is wonderful, obviously.
But yeah.
You know, sometimes you're like, oh, I've got this really great tune at home and I can't play it.
Exactly. Because you have such an eclectic taste on the show. Like, I love listening to it because you play everything.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, it might be a drum and bassy kind of record, one song, and then it's like a folk record the next.
Yeah.
And hip hop, you know, you play everything. Some shit that I'm like, fuck, I don't even know that shit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I doubt there's anyone that listens that like kind of likes all of it. But, you know, if you like 2/3 of it, I think I'll take that. But it's the show's kind of, it's later at night now, so... I know it was kind of earlier on for about 6 months, maybe a year. Mm. I had to kind of rein in some of the kind of more hardcore stuff a little bit. But now they caught wind of it and they're just like, oh man, put me back into the night. So they put me back into like night or midnight. Now I can just like...
That's great.
The management, I mean, the management are listening on a Friday night. So you can like...
True.
I mean, you can get away with unbelievable things.
How much do you have to clean up songs? Because this is the annoying thing for me, like, on the BBC. Because you have to clean up... I mean, sorry, I know you know.
Like, it's pretty much just the hip-hop, the grime, the dancehall stuff that's always a pain in the ass.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of the time... Especially with some of the kind of like, I don't know, kind of like we get kind of hip hop in like there's kind of some Turkish hip hop thing we've been playing recently, and some other bits and bobs and French. A lot of the time it's coming in, you're just like, I know it's filth, there's got to be filth in there.
Yeah.
I mean, there just has to be, but like, no one in this room like speaks the necessary languages a lot of the time. So you're just like, well, it's just going to have to let it go and hope that, you know.
Hope for the best. Hope that
person, that French family aren't listening right now. So yeah, you have to clean up a lot. The problem is as well, everyone, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this, everyone bloody lies about a clean radio edit. It's like no one knows what clean is.
Yeah.
So like you get sent like stuff and they're like, oh, you've cleaned up for you. Like, so yeah. It's,
a lot of people don't see like smoking weed as something they need to clean up.
Well,
so,
that's
like,
not so bad, but you know, they're you still
have
in,
to, BBC have told me
in,
off.
Like, they're leaving, yeah. He's leaving in motherfuckers. You're like, dude, how,
that's
how,
definitely
like,
a swear word.
Like, how is that?
100%.
Like, how are you not like, you start by taking out the motherfuckers. Like, that's start with that.
What did they take out if they didn't take out motherfucker?
I guess they just took out maybe half the motherfuckers.
Jesus Christ.
So yeah, it happens all the time. And then there's certain things that if you, yeah, basically I send it to my team, and if there's like, if there's like, I don't know, 20 minutes of cleaning to do, they'll do it.
Yeah.
But occasionally they'll be like, I'm not spending all day cleaning this one chair.
No.
You're not having it. So they'll throw it back. And some words sound the same when you flip them as well.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So, So we have
shit is always the one.
Yeah, there's a few. So shits were allowed. Shit, we get away with the shit, you know. It's, we do get in trouble.
Fuck. And so you have a lot of guests on there as well.
We do, yeah. We don't, I mean... not so much on the Friday, like the late one. We do, because we do loads of OB stuff, like we're out and about all the time. So we've always got, we're always kind of getting guests on when we're doing the festival stuff.
Who's been the most nightmarish at a festival?
Do you know that band, The War on Drugs? Nightmare. Well, actually, do you know the worst I've ever had? No, Bill Callahan from Smog. And it was my first ever live radio show. And he was up in the studios in Manchester. This thing where like everyone's in a glass room together. And your producer's not in the room with you. They're like through a big like window. They're kind of looking at you like you're the last lobster in a restaurant. You're just like,
what is that look? Like, I want to know what
like,
that look is.
They're just kind of staring at you like you're a freak. And you're like, why don't you come and sit in here with me? Like, I don't like this. Every time I ask him a question, he's just like. I mean, he just stared at me. And I was like, I was nervous as hell anyway. It's like first live show. And everything I said, he just like looked back at me. In the end, I was like, well, if you're not going to talk, I'll put a tune on. That's kind of how he ended it. But yeah, it's one of the only, normally put everything on the iPlayer up, even if it's not great. But like that they did.
What, but like, why do an interview if you can't like...
Well, I don't have it all the time. I've got actual mates of mine who like, you know, make music. You know, we'll be chatting loads off mic and they're being dead friendly. And then, like, they're like, oh, we're ready to go. I'm putting the mic up. And I was like, how's it going? And they're like, what are you going to actually do this to me? You're serious. You're insane.
No.
What was up? What the hell is this?
Oh, shit.
So we were playing football together this afternoon.
Do you think it's nerves? I mean, I guess
they just go into, like, you know, this is who I am. It's always not who you are, is it?
No. I mean, I just can't. I can never stop talking when I'm on radio. That's my problem. I just want to talk all the time about everything, and then 5 minutes later, I'm talking about my obsession with Due South or something like that. And it's all, you know, it's mad. Even when I did your round table, six music round table.
Yeah, good. We should get you back on.
I appreciate that.
We should get you back on.
I'm always good. Come on now. I just talk about shit all the time.
I got banned from doing it because I was like not reining my opinion in enough, and then like I was just going on air.
How dare you have an opinion on the radio?
Well, I think I was going on and just slacking stuff off too hard, and then they were just like, "It's not really supposed to be that vicious." And so,
No one wants like a strong opinion on the BBC. Like it has to just be so.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to like do exactly that and go, I don't know.
And so what's your favourite thing to play right now? Because that was literally one of the top things that I wanted to ask you.
Oh, man.
Apart from the tougher questions that are coming later.
Any memory whatsoever.
That's a good point. Is it because of you got this family now, so you know.
Well,
you
that and like, takes your memory like, away. You know, just partying too much as a teenager and I just didn't leave much of a brain left. I think that's what it is. But it's mainly down to like having two kids, so sleep deprived. I mean, it's so boring, isn't it? Like, who wants to talk about their kids? But
hey,
it's a lot.
Sway has the same experience. You know, it's a mutual.
Yeah, I've got a two-and-a-half-year-old and I'm with you on the sleep.
Oh,
thing,
man.
Yeah.
It's hardcore.
It's a problem, man.
We just go, I've got I've got a little boy who's like 9 months. I've got another one who's three, but they're 9-month-old. You just got to get him to a year, I think, and then it starts getting a bit more mellow.
Yeah,
but for those first...
Didn't
like,
get mellow for me, man.
Did not.
Nah, man.
That first year is hell.
He insists on coming to the bed every night.
Does he?
Yeah, every night.
The problem with, like, when you have one, like, you get the, you get these, you know, you get the gaps, and you can get shit done in the gaps. Like, even if it's just like, I don't know, just going out the garden smoking a fag or whatever, you get gaps. You get two, the gaps are gone. There's no gaps. You're like, what the hell? Like,
because they don't coordinate.
They just steal the gaps.
They should talk to each other.
Like, this is bullshit. I don't get any. This is completely out of order. So now, now we just chuck them in nursery. I just spend all my money on nursery fees.
It's a great idea because then you can at least listen to new music make music. Both of you, are your kids like listening to music or are they enjoy? Do they react to music?
Yeah, my son loves music, man. He's got a little piano in his room.
Sick.
He plays that, man. And he sings everything. He remixes nursery rhymes already. Sick. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Does he have a favorite kind of music?
He just likes, like, he likes Bruno Mars a lot.
Does he?
Yeah, yeah, he knows Bruno Mars. So when you put the Bruno Mars, he will say YouTube. And then he can find Bruno Mars himself on YouTube. Yeah,
no matter what you do, you can block Bruno Mars on YouTube. He still finds him.
He likes Bruno Mars, man. It's like most music, though. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I read somewhere in some children's book when my missus was pregnant. That you should make him listen to classical. So now he's down with classical as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
That's amazing that how music, much you know? It can affect, or, you know, because a baby's totally taken in everything.
My littlest one, the little baby, I mean, he can't even stand up. He's so sensitive to, like, even the most, like, pathetic of beats. I mean, you just put, like, even a tiny little tapping and he just immediately starts going, like you do anything, you just start clapping and he's just like, yeah, fucking do this. And you're just like, what the hell? Whereas, like, normally the other one, I put loads of, like, kind of, like, sort of, like, Zimbabwean stuff on all the time and, like, he loves that because the notes are really high, you know. Yeah. But the other one, I mean, you can honestly, you just tap on a wall and he's just off on it. Sick. It's hilarious. I hope he keeps up. But I got, like, with, like, there's a room at the end of the house where I've got, like, stereo and decks and stuff.
Mm.
And obviously he just loves that because, you know, all the lights.
Mm.
So I put the mixer on. I just put, like, all, like, just try and get as many lights going as I possibly can. And then I got, like, I got a couple of, like, old battered styluses and I put them on. And a couple of battered records, and he just sits there and, like, I just let him scratch them out.
Sick. It's
just like, you can smash this up as much as you want.
That's so much fun.
So every so often, he's like, Dad, where are my styluses? And he puts his ones in, they're just red. There's nothing.
So good that he knows to not
I take my new ones out and I put these ones, there's nothing left on him. And and it's like, these are your two records, you're not allowed any others. And he just sits there and, like, it's hilarious. Like,
Because I remember you telling me a lot of stories about you growing up as well, and like the vinyl from your dad, and how you would have the ultra rare records in his collection, rap records.
Yeah, yeah,
that he would then find in your room.
Yeah, the thing was, though, because, like, obviously he was getting sent, you know, in his record collection is, like, you know, the first ever hip hop records are in there, you know, like, on white labels. The stuff in there is absolutely extraordinary, you know.
Yeah.
We had, like, the guy from Record Collector come round. He's like, you know, like the first like 5 years of hip hop, which no one was like, there's so few people in this country have that. And it's all in there and it's all on white label and everything's got, like, handwritten notes on it. It's just like, what the hell is this doing? And it's like, barn in Suffolk, you know, it's fucking weird, you know. And so there's all this kind of amazing stuff in there. And my brother got into like kind of early hip hop. I mean, my brother's like 42 now, or whatever. But, like, so my dad used to, like, let him and his mates who were, like, learning to break dance and stuff. So he'd give them all these, like, primos, and they would just leave them on. They were just getting bad. All the everything was just getting bad. And then years later, you're just like, Jesus Christ, man, that record's worth absolute bloody fortune. It looks like it's lived outside most of its life. It's just like, yeah, there's loads of those, just like bad things, which are just like,
and stuff that would never have been released properly. And
yeah,
like,
I know. So, like, some of it is, like, heartbreaking. And also, Dad just gave loads, you know, give loads of it as well away. We, like, find out from people, like. Like, Giles Peterson told me the other day that, like, Dad had given him some, like, really, really ultra-rare, like, Fela Kuti record, which apparently fell for. And he was just, like, handing all this shit out. He's like, oh, man. I mean, fair enough.
It's great because the music is there to be shared.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
and also, like, you know, it's his record. You know, they're his records to do what the fuck he wants with. So, it's nice.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's quite... And it's not like we still haven't got, like, you know... 200,000 records too. So it's like,
wow.
It's, there's a few little things where, like, you're like,
And wasn't there something that you were saying to me a long time ago about it, how long it would take to listen to every one of those records?
I don't know.
Just to clarify for every listener, obviously your dad was John Peel.
Yeah.
And you talk as much or as little about it as you like. But like you were saying, how long it would take to listen to every one of these 200,000 records.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have a chance. I mean, you just wouldn't have a chance. Even if you just went through the sevens, you can get through the sevens in your lifetime. You might, I mean, you'd like the 12-inch, I mean, there's like, you know, there's the sevens, there's a sevens building, and there's...
Wow.
There's a 12-inch, there's a 12-inch singles building.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's a barn which is basically just full of early hip hop and drum and bass.
Barn.
Yeah, it's just like early hip hop, drum and bass, and like
crazy.
And like, and
we all look at Turkish over here, the record collector, as he just shakes his head in disbelief.
We got those, you know, the what's his name, tall black guy, and Mr. Thing, and that lot, Eric Lau. They all came down.
I know. I was gutted. I didn't get the phone call.
Well, they did that. They did that Record Store Day EP thing. It was like a little series they'd done.
Yeah,
and they'd like Nothing Leaves the House.
Of course. Yeah, it was very sick.
And a mate of mine knows Tall Black Guy because he weirdly lives in Norwich. I don't know what he's doing there, but anyway. So they kind of hooked that up. The next thing I know, they're all like in the house, just digging away, going crazy. Yeah.
And someone's there going, please put them back where you found them.
Yeah, you know what? Sure it's nice when you get different people in because everything, like literally everything is there.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you always want different people coming in and digging about because everyone's going to have a different approach and everyone everyone kind of digs about in different ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to get people, they'll access stuff for you.
Is there anything that they picked out that you were like, just don't touch that?
Would you know what? No, not at all. We'd never do that. I mean, they're all records, you know. The point, they're there to be played, you know. So do what you want with them. I wasn't there for that one. Well, hilariously, this guy Leon, who kind of looks after the records for us a bit, I came back. He'd been looking after that. He'd been there at a house on his own for like a week or something. And I came back, and there was like a pile of records, like the length of this room, probably like, I don't know, like 5 meters of records just coming off the wall. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, oh, I just got started on this little project and I couldn't stop. And I was like, what's the project? He's like, in these records is every single sample from the Donuts album.
Oh,
and I was like,
shit.
Are you serious? He's like, yeah, I worked out. And he was like that on like, sample.com. And I was like, there's loads of crazy shit in there, like old British folk songs, and like some mad shit in there. And he just pulled, he's like, yeah, the whole of Donuts is here. And I was like, what are you going to do now? He's like, oh, I guess I'll put it all back. So it must have taken him a day to file it back in. Yeah. So
just to show you in that one moment.
I think he wanted to prove to himself like the quality of the collection. Like if I can recreate Donuts out of this, then this is a good
everything.
Thing. Yeah, like what's some mad shit in there? Like I really bet. Weird, like sort of like 60s, 50s, like British folk stuff. There's some crazy stuff in there.
There's also some very, very randomly stupid rap fact that I'll say because I've had a few vodkas, is that Dilla went to Mr. Bongo's back in the day and he bought a Jest and Tommy Evans record. And on Donuts, you can hear Tommy Evans, UK rapper, very obscure, like not many people will remember him. It's him going, in the middle of Donuts.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if Leon digged that out. Must be in there if he did the job well.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
I remember Tommy Evans. Where is he now?
He went very, like, he converted.
He'd done that back then.
Way back then. I think he still has. And there were so many rumours going about that he was, like, he got, like, radicalised all of this stuff. It was nonsense. But, yeah, he's, Tommy Evans, rapper turned converted. He got a huge ginger beard now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, Tommy.
Factual.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this, I mean, the collection I have a billion questions about, and there's a lot, obviously, I wouldn't talk about on air, but there must be just some fantastic, fantastic things that you found.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, like the reason why it's good to have other people come in and dig about in it is because, like, it's kind of impenetrable. Because, like, it's the scale. I mean, it's like the 12-inch like albums are all filed up, but like, you know, the sevens and the sevens and the 12-inch singles are all there to set off vertical. And a lot of the time, you just go out there and it's just this wall, and you're just like, man, I can't face it. So basically, in our house, like in the kitchen, there's like, you know, there's like a crappy CD player with like a load of, you know, like a pile of CDs, nothing's in its case, like a load of Soundwave compilations. And every and we have the same ones all the time, the same ones that have been playing for like 2 years in our house. And everyone comes in, it's like, got 200,000 records. So, like, someone go and pick a sodding record. And then you'd like, someone will be gone for an hour and then they'll just come back in the kitchen and go, I just put that CD on. It's like, this is fucking insane. So, yeah, we've just listened to the same thing. It's like, you just can't face it. It's too, I mean, I go into the Sevens more than anything else because they're kind of easier to deal with.
Yeah,
I go in there. There's loads of really great kind of like 70s African stuff, and there's loads of brilliant dub in there. Mm-hmm. Loads of really good dub. So I go in there like digging for dub a lot.
You feel free to just shut this question down. I'll edit it out.
Yeah, go on.
It's fine. You found some handwritten notes in there as well.
Yeah, there's loads. I mean, that's kind of what's really interesting about it is that everything's got handwritten notes in it, pretty much. And they're all from, like, you know, they're all from, because they've all been sent, like, in the early days. So, like, everything's, you know, there's some handwritten notes by people that are just kind of, like, nervous little kind of notes written by little boys going, here's my record, what do you think? And then, like, you know, it's signed, like, Bowie. You know, and there's kind of all kinds of, you know, there's all of that stuff in there. So, like, for all those kind of, like, you know, the kind of gods of British music, there's, like, a note from them as a child. So, like, there's all that stuff. And then the same thing with, like, you know, the same with all the dance stuff, you know, like, all the, you know, like, little notes from Jeff Mills and stuff. You know, as I say, it's kind of all the genres. Mm. It's quite fun. You know, and as a kid, when I was, like, I first got into, like, basically when Britpop turned up, and I hated it, so I was just, like, I just listened to nothing but jungle for 10 years. And so, like, all those records, like, all my heroes, you know, they're sending dad records to my dad, like, do you know this guy? And I'd be like, what the fuck? Like, you've got a handwritten letter from, like, book, and what the hell, man? So I'm just losing my shit and all this stuff. So,
I miss the days of handwriting a DJ letter.
So, like, it doesn't matter, like, what you're into musically, there'll be a letter in there that'll blow your mind.
It's
incredible.
It's a difficult one because do you separate the records from the notes and frame them? Do you keep it all together?
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
And the record has to be, you know, I'll leave them together.
Yeah, that's a good show. Would you ever
consider selling?
Well, we've got to try and rehouse them. You know, they can't stay. The problem is, you know, as I've been saying, the it's arguably like, you know, it's one of the most important record collections in the world. Like, according to the guy from Record Collector who's been looking at it, he's like, this is the single most, like, extreme record collection in the world.
Wow.
And the problem is, because it's kind of impenetrable, we need to take it to some massive institution who can help us make it so that, like, you guys and everyone else can access it. So, you know, like, when those four guys came over and sampled stuff and put out these tunes, and I was, like, listening to the, you know, and they sent me those, like, the promo of it, and I was putting them down, listening to this stuff that's been sampled and shared, and I was like, that's what I want, like, all the time. I want everyone to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I want, like, you know, young kids going, I need some, like, samples that no one else is using.
Yeah,
you, like, you can go in there and find a record that no one else has listened to for, like, 50 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, ideally, it'd be finding a way. We're going to need someone with some serious cash to help us do it, but, like, basically a way of making it, like, accessible so people can use it as, like, a source of, you know, like, you know, there's library, you can go to the British Library and, like, you know, got the books, it's kind of the same thing, but, like, a sound library where you can just access all this mad shit.
And how much is, I mean, having this wonderful upbringing of this, like, incredible selection of tunes that you can get, it's really influenced your selections, like we were saying before, and the kind of great varied way that you do it on your show.
I've never been kind of into genres as such, like, I'm not like, well, I mean, I didn't like Britpop, but it wasn't because I just didn't like the noises that were being, I didn't like the sounds. I've never really been, like, a genre guy. I just, like, I like certain sounds and noises no matter, like, what they're being used in. I just kind of like, I'm more of a kind of sound thing than a genre thing. So I kind of hear, like, little bits and bobs and different things, you know, whether that's in a folk record or whether that's, you know, in a grime record, whatever.
For me, I look for two things in a record. Does it make me want to fight or does it make me want to cry?
Right. Okay.
If it can do one of those two things.
Are they your only two emotions?
That is, I do not have any other emotions. That is it. So it doesn't matter if that... if that comes from a folk record or like Emiliano Torrini,
right,
or it comes from DMX.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's all I'm looking for. Hey, and DMX slipping, that makes me want to cry.
Yeah, well, you get both.
So I'm fine.
Maybe, maybe there's records out there that'll do both for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one thing I want to say to Sway before we, because we're nearly at 45. Because I remember the day when I was, what? I mean, this is taking about, in the second half, we'll go into this properly.
Yeah.
When I was 14, and I remember bumping into you in Oxford Street, and this is a very seminal moment. I remember Semtex was there.
Yeah.
And he introduced me, and then we got the train back together to Finsbury.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and you said you just decided to stop sampling.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, I'm not sampling anymore, man. That's it. I'm done with sampling records, and you should too.
Yeah.
Stop sampling records. Yeah, yeah.
I was on everyone about that. Yeah, I was on everyone.
That was a seminal moment for me. So so you
carried on for a while, though.
I did. how do you feel about it now?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not as strict as I was before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I understand, like, you know, like, there's no such thing as a brand new idea, and to be able to take something someone's created respectfully and make it into something new is like paying homage to that that work as well. But for me, it was just kind of like, you know, I felt like it was getting too easy. You know, it's like, to be a producer and to be a musician, it's like, I've been into music since I was like 10 or something. You know what I mean? I had an Amiga and Atari and all them things, and I learned how to program shit. You know what I mean? I weren't someone that was able to just take a loop and then saying, this is all mine. You know what I mean? Like, so after a while, it was kind of like, as I started playing a bit more, I was learning about instruments, how to record instruments in and stuff like that. I was like, nah, everyone should do this. And also, another thing, I was heavily influenced by, you know this, by West Coast music.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
Although they used to, like, interpolate a lot of big funk records, they used to replay everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? They used to, you know, Tupac records, a lot of them weren't like straight samples. They were like people, you'd read the sleeves and there'd be like a bass guitar player and drums by.
And they would take it somewhere else.
And they'd take it to another place. So I just felt like, especially where British hip hop was and what British hip hop was known for, it was kind of known for taking old loops and just kind of rapping depression over it, man. And I was trying to change that shape and make it into something different. So but no, I've sampled since, but I've never really, like, it's very rare for me to kind of like take a loop and you know.
Was it Tribal Quest recently on that new record of theirs where they spent like 3 years with like loads of musicians creating their own sample bank?
De La Soul.
Oh, wow.
De La Soul. Yeah, so they just like created like hours and hours, they've done years doing it, didn't they? Now they've just got this huge bank.
That's amazing.
They're just sampling
own. That's what I do now, like, all the time. I just get live musicians in and I sample them and I record it and fuck it up like it's a sample.
You feel amazing about it as well. Yeah. Like, this is actually mine from scratch.
Exactly.
You know, it's an incredible feeling when you create a record from scratch.
And that's why a lot of the time when I get a harp in or whatever it is, or strings or brass, whoever, like, I have many ways. Like, I get them to play something that I think they want to play. I get them to start them out just playing something nice and over the track.
Yeah.
But the things that I always use, that I always end up using, is when I go, okay, before you go, and they're starting to pack up. And I'll go, before you go, I want you to do two takes over the whole song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Playing whatever you want to play.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they just go, fuck, you know, doing some fucking weird shit.
Giving them the freedom to be creative,
exactly. And I always end up just chopping it out, maybe using it on that song, using it on another song, whatever it is. And I think that's the beauty of it, when you create your own samples.
Yeah.
Mostly because today's, you know, music industry is so fucked that someone will sue you if you've got a slight sample in there anyway.
It's nuts,
it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
We couldn't be Pete Rock or DJ Premier today. We couldn't get away with it.
Right. It'd be mental on the publishing.
We'd be fucked. Like, we'd just have to give away.
I mean, even those guys, man. What happened? How come people weren't stinging them?
I don't even know. I think they did get... I think I heard a rumor that Pete Rock got very badly sued, okay, but on a bunch of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think it did come back around and everyone got fucked for it.
Yeah.
Because there were some big samples in there. Yeah, but you know what?
He must have knew it was coming.
Yeah, exactly. Don't sample the Jackson 5 on records. Yeah. And just like, I feel you. Well, that's a beautiful time to take the tradition of the piss break. And we'll be back for the second half of the Thanks for Trying podcast. Yeah. We're rolling? Excellent. All right. Welcome back to part two of the Thanks for Trying podcast. We're back in, going in. It's the tradition that we do a shot. So me and Tom are going to take the hit. Sway with the soda. You can still cheers us for this.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Let's do it.
I don't remember agreeing to this.
Cheers.
Cheers. Nice. Cheers. What the hell?
Excellent.
I'm already hungover.
That's the best way to get over a hangover. The more you've said it, like, the more I think this is definitely just an excuse for me to fuel my alcoholism.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Gotta do what you gotta do, bro.
You know what I mean?
Maybe we'll have to get all your guests on. Like, maybe in the 20th episode, we'll have like an intervention.
You know what?
And you'll come on to do a show, and there'll be all of us here. We'll just pack you off to some like cheap as chips for like,
yeah.
Like cheap as chips rehab.
I can't afford the Priory.
It's
gotta, man,
be like,
I
can't some, do it. It's gotta be some real cheap one out in Hackney somewhere.
It has to be. So I had a bunch of questions. You touched on very briefly, but I wanted to talk about your friendship and business relationship with Akon, and like, because it's a very interesting thing that
that's been a
minute, and I haven't heard you speak on it about it too much recently. So
yeah,
talk to me.
I mean, like, the thing is, you know, my whole thing has always been kind of like, everything is possible, you know. Like, if you, there wasn't a social media kind of like following at the time.
Mm.
So, you know, at one point, Akon was the biggest, possibly the biggest R&B star on the planet, on the face of the planet. And, you know, being born in Britain, having parents from Ghana, West Africa, always meant that I was kind of like, I always had like a dual nationality type thing going on. I always wanted to represent the whole British side, but also represent my roots as well. Mm. And out of all the artists in the world, I felt like Akon was doing that, the way he represented, he held down Senegal and America at the same time. So I didn't know nothing about Akon, but I'd always felt like, you know, I felt like he was a guidance for me in some kind of way. And so what happened was, I freestyled over one of his beats for DJ Semtex mixtape called Crunk and Grime. I think it was Soul Survivor.
That was a sick tape, man.
He killed it with that tape. And I freestyled over it, and I'd used the Soul Survivor, and just kind of like, you know, I was like really watching Akon, and Semtex was out in the Bahamas, and I think he had given the mixtape to Akon.
Shit.
And I think Akon had seen like Soul Survivor, man. That's my joint, man. What's going on?
Yeah.
That's not my name, though. You know what I mean? And he checked it out. And one thing led to another, and he had come back to the UK. And I think it was on radio, he had said, like, if anybody knows, like, this kid, Sway, like, let him know I'm looking for him, kind of thing.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, in a friendly way, but I was shook, man. Come on, like, you know how I was back then. You know what I mean? So I was kind of like, that's amazing, like that, because I've always felt connected to him. And then I can't, you know, it's a little bit hazy in how it all happened, but the next stage of it was that it was World Cup time, and MTV were taking a UK act and a US act out to Germany to watch a few games at the World Cup.
Right.
And it just so happened to be me and Akon.
Perfect.
You know? And so we finally got to link up. We had a conversation. I kind of told him like about all of my kind of aspirations and what I was trying to achieve and how I admired him. And he was just like, man, like, I hear so much about you in the UK, and you know, everywhere I go, people are talking about you, blah, blah, blah. Let's get together and let's do something, you know? And I was like, this is an amazing thing. So every time he'd come to London, I'd link up with him, but then he was doing stuff out in the States as well. And they'd fly me out, like go out,
go out there, like when he was on tour with Rihanna in Rihanna's early days. Man, there's I've seen a lot of stuff go down that I can't talk about
on this clearly podcast. Clearly, we all want to know about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I haven't been drinking, so.
Damn it. That's usually how I get the guests.
Yeah.
I'm just getting very drunk and everyone talks about everything.
But basically, man, I mean, the time when he was working on the Michael Jackson stuff, I was around when he was working on the Lionel Richie stuff. I was around when he was working on the whole Lady Gaga thing. I was there, like, and a lot of the time, man, this is one of the most amazing things. Like, Akon had a big entourage, but he could see that I wanted to learn. So a lot of the times, him and Giorgio is his, was at the time, like, Akon's, like, right-hand man in terms of production. Like, a lot of the times, the entourage would clear the studio, but they'd let me stay in the studio and be like, sick, sweet, chill, man, chill. Wow. So it'd be just me and them creating, and I'd be a fly on the wall watching them do all of these records that go number one.
Hit me.
You know what I mean? There's even a real funny moment where I was at the Sanderson Hotel, you know, Akon called me up and he was like, let's go out tonight, blah, blah. No, he's like, we're going studio tonight. And I'd got there and I was in the lobby waiting for him to come down, and this French guy come sat down next to me, proper spruced up. You know what I mean? Like sitting there with his laptop. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? I was like, I'm waiting for Akon. And he was like, okay, cool. What do you do? And I'm like, I work with Akon. I'm like one of the artists. He goes, another one. Akon signs everybody, blah, blah. He's like, I'm waiting for Akon too. And I was like, cool. And he pulls out his laptop and he goes, what do you think of this beat? So he plays me the beat. I'm like, yeah, it's banging, man. This is sick. I was like, you're a producer. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to be doing a song with Akon. And I was like, that's amazing, man. I'm going to come down to the studio and watch you guys do the record together. And he's like, so what do you do? I'm like, I'm a rapper. And then he said, what's your name? Sway, blah, blah, blah. He actually had one of my records, Say It Twice. He had heard it or something, and he was like, yeah, it's really clever, blah, blah, blah. I'd heard this record where you say everything twice, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, just about to go out to the studio with them, Akon comes downstairs, yo, Sway, let's go, blah, blah, blah. Get to the studio. As I'm walking out the door, Akon's, a friend of mine, is Akon's like, business partner at the time, was like, Sway, we need to talk about something. Let's go to lunch, and then we can hit the studio afterwards.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, cool, man, we'll catch up with them later, blah, blah, blah. Went to lunch, sat down with Babs is his name, Giorgio, Akon and the French guy went to the studio, made a record. And I was with Babs for hours, and then they'd come back later. They'd come back all hyped up. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, this is a smash, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that record was Sexy Bitch.
Yeah.
The French guy was David Guetta.
Oh,
yeah, no. You know what I mean? And you know, like, I'm not like a super... I mean, like, that bad. I don't know if I could have ever been on the record, but shit, you know,
imagine.
I'm not like a super dance head. So I knew of his name.
Yeah,
you know I mean, when he introduced himself as David, he wouldn't say I'm David Guetta. He was just like David, you know.
Yeah,
so I didn't really know of him at that moment in time. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's a funny story I have to tell about.
So,
yeah. They made that record and that went number one.
Of course.
And that ended up being a total massive smash.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Hell.
So yeah, they did that in London.
I mean, it must have been just like an amazing, I mean, there's many amazing situations that you've been in that I could ask you about and talk to you about.
Yeah.
But that is just like kind of fascinating to watch. Like also the end of an era of pop, because it was pop, even though it was R&B and fucking great R&B at that. It was the end of an era of pop that signified a change as well.
Yeah.
You know, he did incredible music, but he was also very aware socially as well.
Oh, totally, man. I mean, it's like I said, man, it's such a shame that at that point there wasn't like Instagram and stuff like that, because the amount of things that I could have shown people in a good light that would have inspired people at the time.
Yeah.
There was just no, all I could do is come back and tell like the man them about it. You know what I mean? It was like, it's just like, yo, I was just in the studio and they were on the phone to Michael Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, and that's it stopped there. You know what I mean? If it was these days, it would have been like, you know, guys,
it's on the phone, Michael Jackson. You can't see me, but I turned my phone around. So it would have been like that. But them times, yeah, I don't even know. The phone had a camera, but it was a shit. When
a terrible
couldn't do
one.
Nothing with the footage. Yeah. Just watch it later. Incredible time. So even now, it's like I said, back to what I was saying about like always being like. Being early on things, it's an amazing thing for me because I've always been someone that's been daring, like, and wanting to discover things early. Mm-hmm. And even now, like, I see what's happening with the whole Drake and the co-sign, and I think it's amazing. And I think what's even more amazing now is that it's documented.
Yeah.
Because again, the other day,
because it happened then. It happened back then.
Yeah, because I even heard the other day, like, oh, Drake put a UK act on a Billboard number one record.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Again, we weren't really in the social media world when Lasers came out.
Mm.
And I was the only rap feature on Lupe's Lasers, which went Billboard number one in America in 2011. Again, there wasn't really that kind of... Mm. There was Twitter, innit?
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was kind of weird.
We Love You was the record, right?
That
was,
it was a record.
That was Lupe Fiasco. There was Lasers, just for people.
Break the Chain.
Okay.
It was a record called Break the Chain. And
so We Love You never came out.
No, I never came out officially.
Because that was a fucking ridiculous record. I still play that record.
Like, Lupe's my guy. Like, Lupe, Lupe, man, like, that's like a brother. You know what I mean? Like, that's like different level of love for that guy, man. I remember that when he put me on the Lasers album, he's like, I swear I'm doing another album. And, you know, it's I've got this record, I think it's going to suit you.
Mm.
And it was really, actually, it was really such a blessing because at that point, you know, I was going through something in life where I needed that kind of surge, that boost, you know? So then when I did my verse for it, I was kind of like, who else is on the album? Like, what other rappers? I was thinking he's going to put a bunch of rappers on that. And he was just kind of like, no, just you.
Even Jay-Z. No one this time.
I was like, he's like, just you. And I was, literally saw the track listing come out. I was in America at the time when it went number one. You know what I mean? It was an amazing experience. He brought me out on stage. Mm-hmm. It was so incredible. So, yeah, man, it's like, this whole UK-US thing, it's been going on. Way before me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just good to see that there's now a platform where there's a light shone on it and people can actually see that, listen, man, these UK guys are actually here to stay, like, they really rap, you know? So
I mean, I mean, you know, a couple of hours isn't enough time for me to talk to you. We could definitely, you know, have so much to chat about. But I mean, for me, like, talking about UK rap going back and back and back, like one of the most inspirational moments for me, like Tom, for people at home that don't know, I went to school with Sway.
Yeah.
Right.
So we went to school together and like Sway taught me how to produce music. So if it wasn't for Sway, I wouldn't be making beats.
For Twix, apparently.
Taught me how to use the MPC. Taught me to like all of this shit. And I remember being in the fucking music rooms with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And like kind of just before I even made beats, kind of just watching how you made beats, which is very interesting. And like kind of even now I kind of think back, and I was clearing out my parents' house the other day and I found a tape that I know Turkish wants to hear that like that just says Sway old beats.
Wow.
And I'm kind of in I need to find a fucking Walkman.
I'll swap it for your record collection.
Yeah, yeah.
But like there's a couple of things I remember from being in the music room.
Yeah.
And one of them we spoke about recently, about like how I remember you recording your ad-libs first.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind because you were doing, maybe this was before One, I can't remember, the Phoenix Crew, when One was Phoenix Crew.
Yeah.
And
wow,
and you were doing the ad-libs first. Yeah. And I was like, bear in mind I was probably 12.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't understand how this happens.
Yes, yeah, so the thing is, like, I like to enjoy the process of recording, you know? So I like to set it up so that I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I like there to be more of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, the ad-libs first is just me and me together. You know what I mean? It's like a friendship. You know what I mean? So once I've, like the previous me has recorded, he's already in existence. He's a character. Mm. You know what I mean? Then another me. So I've got backup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I'm rapping and he comes in, you know what I mean? Which is me. Before, you know what I mean, I feel like
I wish you were drunk right now. Yeah. This is so amazing.
No, I feel good about it. You know what I mean, I feel like I've got backup. You know,
you
what
cloned
I mean?
Yourself.
Like, you know, yeah, if it's something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean. So I mean, even to this day, like when I record stuff, I record in all different types of ways, man. Like I enjoy the process of recording so much. And the whole ad-lib thing, yeah, I remember doing that. And people didn't understand it, but it's like the verse was already done. Yeah. In my mind, you just hadn't heard it yet.
Yeah.
So when I was doing the ad-libs, I already knew what I was ad-libbing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I just wanted to, when I do the performance, I just needed Derek and Derek to back me up. You know what I mean? So,
do you still do that now?
No, I don't record like that. Now I've got really lazy technology. Right. Like before, I used to learn the verse.
Right.
You know what I mean, because it was a studio, it was like 11 of us using the studio. There was no time to punch.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You just got to go in, know your verse, get it down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And even the peer pressure of doing loads of takes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't a cool thing. You know what I mean? Like if you're
out of here.
Yo, start again. Yo, you're out of here. You can't rap. You know what I mean? Like, but now I do bare stuff in secret.
Okay,
I literally do a word every second.
Oh, well, so you deserve like, it, man.
Yo.
Bone fog style.
Sweet. I just paste it all together, put the faders in it, and I've got a verse. You know what I mean? Yeah, so now we're a lot more lazy. But back then, I had to you had to know a verse inside out and lay it down properly, like two takes max.
Of course.
Pirelli was someone I used to. He was a genius at that, man. He used to go like maybe like 36 bars just all in one go. Yeah, you know what I mean, I used to do that. Like maybe two takes, you know.
Mm.
Yeah,
I remember that. I mean, we did March and came in and just killed that and pretty much. Like
you've come a long way, man. You've come a long way, man. Your first beats were really terrible, man.
Oh, thank you, man. But you know, but the thing is, you actually heard my first beats.
Yeah,
there's not many people that heard my first beats.
Yeah, but you were really good at taking criticism, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You could see sometimes you were hurt, but you'd hold it in.
The thing is, like 100%, I agree with you. I was fucking like 12 years old.
Yeah.
So I think now of like talking to a 12-year-old.
I expected too much of you.
Yes. Bro, think about telling that to a 12-year-old now. Like, bro, you're shit. Like, oh, fuck. Didn't give up, though.
Yeah.
But like, no, you're right. But like, even like when we did March with Verb T and Kaiser, like that was fucking, you know, that was a sick record that you came, you did the Mike Skinner record.
Yeah.
Harvey Nicks.
Yeah.
Classic record. Mitchell Brothers.
Yeah.
And then you came and did my shit. And then I can't even remember what the next thing, whether it was the Ian Brown record or whatever.
Yeah. A lot of collaborations.
A lot of collaborations at that time, man.
I was proper selective, man. I was just like, working with people who've got the talent in it. Like, there was a point where everybody was trying to get a verse out of me. And to be honest, like, you just got to do stuff that you enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we were talking about the record collection earlier. Like, you had the maddest CD collection. Mm. What happened to those CDs? You still got them?
Man, I sold it. I just got rid of them.
Did you?
Oh, man.
Yeah, my CD collection was crazy. Because I remember being in my house and I played you Tech N9ne for the first time.
Yes. Yeah, it was you,
I played, and like I said, bruv, listen to how Tech N9ne raps in reverse.
Yeah.
I was like, this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I was like, shit.
It inspired me hard.
Decipher.
Yeah.
I was like, yo.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, nah.
Like,
yeah, it was Tech N9ne, and you bought all the No Limit stuff as well. You had like the £20 albums.
Bro, I spent every penny on
I had to wait for them to come down. You know what I mean?
Man, that's the thing. I would be broke I would pay everything for like a Master P album and then go, shit, well, I can't buy anything for like 2 months. But I've got a Master P album,
which
no one cares about.
Yeah, definitely an amazing one.
We put like a quid each in on a 12.
Yeah.
When we were like kids in Ipswich, you put like a quid in each. Because you'd be one set of decks, you'd all go to round.
Oh, that's
crazy. One person had decks. And we all chipped in for the decks and we all chipped in for the vinyl. And so you'd all just like, you just had this like communal collection. And then obviously, like at some point, everyone's like, I've got my own decks. And you're like, well, you're not having any of these communal records. You've got to start again.
It's crazy, man. No, you had an amazing CD collection. So it's only right that when you got into production, you were going to be eclectic. Because you were the only one that I really knew that. You never really chose a side when it came to hip hop.
Mm.
Like, you never had like the West Coast only thing.
I was a big Tupac guy, though. I never listened to Biggie. I was just like, Tupac, Daz, Quick.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yeah.
And then, of course, No Limit. But, you know, like, you went in.
We had a really similar taste. That changed after a while, though.
Yeah.
You went back to sampling, man. You went back to sampling.
DJ Premier. Yeah. That was it. DJ Premier fucked it for me.
It's amazing. No, those are amazing times, man. Amazing days, man. Like, and.
So Tom, speaking of that, talking about origins, like, it's for me, it's very interesting, like, how you actually transitioned everything and moved yourself into radio, because I know that you...
Well, good old-fashioned nepotism, isn't it, essentially, but it's what it comes down to.
No!
I
don't believe in that.
Because
you're fucking, like, I'm not fucking just, you know, blowing smoke and all this stuff, but you're very fucking good at it.
Well, it's very, I mean, the thing about, like, you know... Radio's like somebody else, like you, there's lots of people out there that are really good, but like the radio's kind of, you know, it's based on the clock. There's a finite amount of people that can sit on that clock, and you know, it's not like, you know, it doesn't matter how many great DJs there are out there, they can only fit so many of you onto a clock. So, you know, it's about, you know, it's just about trying to get onto that schedule, and it's really, really hard. You know, and nepotism definitely helped me get on the clock. I mean, there's no denying that. But, it doesn't mean I'm not doing a good job at it. But there's lots of people that are out there that would also do a good job, but maybe didn't get the chance.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very aware of that. So,
But I still don't believe that, because if it was really nepotism, you'd be on fucking Radio 1 doing the Zane Lowe show.
I'm too old for Radio 1, man. I'm like 37.
Oh, come on.
You must be kidding me.
Never too old for radio.
You gotta be on. No, I mean, to present, you gotta be like, you know.
But like, to me, you're always a 25-year-old dashing young man who fucking understands music, and most importantly,
I just like making
a racket.
I mean, the thing that's good about Six, you know, is that, which, you know, you don't get at many other stations. Not stations that are going to pay you anyway, but like. Mm. You know, I'm allowed to jump around. I'm allowed to jump genres. Then you're not allowed, you don't get many kind of specialist late night shows, especially on the BBC, where you're allowed to kind of like jump genres like that. You know, they're kind of genre specific shows. And so the Six Music thing late night's good, because they'll let me kind of muck about, and they'll let me make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
You know, and I can put nasty stuff on, and then like follow up with something pretty. And a lot of places aren't going to let you do that. They're like, either just play hip hop or just play like, you know.
I think a lot of people don't account for our eclectic taste as humanity. You know, like I feel like I don't just listen. Like, I grew up listening to Tupac. Like, I'm Tupac's biggest fan. But at the same time, I still listen to fucking.
I think it was like that. Like when we were growing up, you were like, you had to like pick your gang, didn't you?
Of course,
what's your thing? It's like, well, I'm into grunge, or what's your thing? It's like, I'm into hip hop. You had to pick your thing, you know. So I went from like being a grunge guy to being like a drum and bass guy to being a hip hop guy, and you had to stick with your group. You can't just go, well, I'm going to hang out with all of you. Like, no, fucking pick a gang, dude. And that was how it was. I think now, like, it's because, like, you know, mainly because of kind of, you know, the internet and stuff, and the way that we consume music, I don't think kids now have to do that so much.
Yeah.
You know, I think they can actually just go, well, you know, I like hip hop, but, you know, shit, I saw this band the other day that's great, and they can do that now in a way that, you know, we couldn't so much. So I think it's a lot easier now. I think kids listening is way more eclectic, and they can be more open about it being eclectic than maybe we could when we were younger.
So greatest song ever written, in your opinion?
Oh, shit.
Both of you.
Oh, man, I can't even name a song.
Wow, that's so tough, man.
Yeah.
Fuck. I mean, I definitely have a list. Like, you know, whether it be Pete Rock and CL Smooth, Troy, obviously.
Okay.
Nas World.
So it's a hip-hop record.
Nas World Is Yours.
Okay.
You know, but then again, I could go Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run, I think is a sick fucking record.
Mm.
Frank Sinatra, That's Life.
Mm.
I think it's a great record. You know, I've got billions of them. I know you've got one.
Go on.
No, I haven't. You know, you know what I mean, I haven't. I was just thinking about it. Like, I really like
Chaka Khan ain't nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing record, but I wouldn't say it's the greatest song ever written. It's my favourite record. But the greatest song, I don't know, man. It's a tough one, man.
I'm so easily, yeah, like, I just, like, my favourite thing is always the last thing I heard. Like, I'm just, yeah, like, I'm like a kid in a sweet shop, yeah, just, like, dying towards, like, you know, I just hear something and I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
Was
like,
the last,
this is the best thing,
yeah, I've ever heard. What was the last great record you heard?
Do you know what? I've had, actually, there's a new Future Islands album. And the last track on that, like, weirdly, at the end, it's just him doing a song and Debbie Harry's on it.
Oh, shit.
And weirdly, I thought, this isn't going to work. And then I'm not joking, I reckon I listened to it 20 times yesterday. Wow. And I was just like, this is just one of these things where, like, all the right people have to come together at the right time, in the right place.
Yeah.
And they've just, like, everything has just, like, all the things have aligned and it's just like, perfect, perfect song. It just sits, yeah, at the end of an album. You're just like...
Because it's all about the frequencies that affect you and the time and the mood and everything that
you're affected. Timing is key.
Exactly. Yeah. But for you, what's the record that you return to? What's the song that you return to as safety? You know, you think, this, in my time of need, I'm going to listen to this song. I feel like that's a key recognizer.
I just listen to Ice Cream by Wu-Tang on a loop. For like, if ever I'm in trouble, I'm just going to put that on a loop for a day. And I just sit there like, oh man, I'll just have this go round and fucking round. I've never got bored of that. I've had it like go days
where just go
round and round. Yeah, that's my go-to.
It's a great, I mean, swear, you must have a few of the go-to records.
Yeah, I've got quite a few. Change the Game, Quick. I think that's one of the most amazing songs that's ever been put together.
I think DJ Quick like definitely inspired you a lot.
Massively.
Yeah.
Massively. DJ Quick, Dre, Sugar Free.
Mm.
What else? Regulate.
Regulate.
Regulate Warren G.
That was like a fantastic record for using a looped sample and taking it somewhere else.
Yeah. Regulate, that's a record that you can't...
A story record as well, because you did a lot with stories.
Yeah, yeah.
You did a lot telling stories, with doing this, like, fucking amazing shit with like, telling tales through music.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that makes sense.
I love story records, and story artists, like, everyone from Nas. Nas is probably one of the best storytellers. Mm. Eminem as well.
Yeah.
He's an amazing storyteller. Like, when you can tell a story on a good song...
Yeah.
It's just, for me, it's just like, it's pure gold, you know.
And that is lost a little bit recently. That's the one thing.
Totally, 100%.
So I miss a bit.
100%. But it's just, it's a case of, does anyone really want to hear that in this kind of generation? Because, you know, right now it's, you know.
Could you make a stand in 2017?
Potentially. I think, you know, the person who's going to come out and do that, you know what I mean? I mean, the person who's going to do that is going to be breaking the mold, because there isn't many records like that right now.
Mm.
I mean, everything's about turning up, isn't it? You know, so so if someone comes with a story that makes you turn up, then they might win, you know. But I mean, just, do people want to hear stories, or do they just go to YouTube and watch one? You know what I mean? It's like,
do you know what? Like, I've always been like, because I have to compile stuff so quickly. I have to find so much music to build shows. Because like
every week,
because I'm like a control freak, I don't let anyone else involved. Like, I just lock myself in my room, and so most people put shows together, like their producers will like pick stuff out and help them do stuff. Whereas I would just lock myself and I do my own running orders and I post it. But when people start working on their show, they're like, "What the hell's going on? He's just done my job for me. Like, what am I supposed to do?"
Yeah.
And so, like, because I work that way, a lot of the time I'm not listening to records properly. So I quite often miss the stories, you know. It's not a great way to listen to music, which is why I end up getting caught up so much in just sounds and noises that I like. Yeah. And then it's not until I quite often then go back to stuff that I've played loads and loads and loads.
And get a new
understanding. And I've still I might have played something 20 times. I've never bothered to listen to the story. Just get so up in the rhythm of it.
Yeah.
And then it's not until I've kind of dropped it from playing it loads that I go back and I was like, shit, that's what it's about, you know. And it's not a good way of listening, but like, and I don't like it. But
I've got the emotion though.
Yeah, but it's just like...
When you're busy making it, you don't necessarily involve yourself in the objective perspective.
You come out of a different way, though, don't you? You're a story man, so you're kind of the opposite to us.
Yeah,
You're starting with the story and then going from there.
So. Yeah, like, even like a lot of the time, I probably work like the opposite way. For me, like lyrically, first is the first thing that engages me.
Because you've got something you want to say, so it's going to start with the story, isn't it?
Yeah, so even when I'm listening to music, it's like, sometimes it's really hard to ignore really shit lyrics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I always keep, I'm always aware of the shit lyrics. Yeah.
It's really hard for me like to enjoy the music when the lyrics are really bad, you know? But yeah, no, I think lyrics are really important. But at the same time, when I watch some of like people writing records and even now writing records for other people and stuff like that, sometimes it's just about the vibe, you know what I mean? Like most of the greatest songs are gibberish first, and then they find the words that. And Michael Jackson does it all the time. I think a lot of the time Michael Jackson didn't even change the gibberish parts. Yeah, you know what I mean, we just made words out of it. You know what I mean, I'm not really even sure if he said if Annie, if he was asking if Annie was okay.
Yeah, no one knows.
I think I think we just assumed that.
Do you know why? What that lyric? I found this out when I did.
Annie,
like,
are you okay?
Annie, you're okay, right? Yeah. I found this out because like, there was a point a couple of years ago when I realized, you know, I've always been self-employed, done shit on my own.
Yeah.
I've never been in a job situation where they've paid for a first aid course, right?
Okay.
So I thought, you know what? It's Christmas. Yeah. Like, I've got £60. I'm going to spend this £60 on doing a first aid course.
Amazing. That's a strange way to spend 60 quid.
No, I was like, bruv, what if someone's fucking, you know.
Well,
like,
no, I mean, it's good. Collapsed
or something. I'm just going to, like, I wouldn't know what to do. So yeah. I thought I was going to spend this 60 now. Quid. Yeah. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to go and fucking save somebody's life. So I did this course. And then, we're doing this, the things on the floor, you know, where you give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation with this, like, fucking, the what's it called? The mannequin that's there. And I'm like, and then we started doing it. And I started researching it. And I was like, this the model that this mannequin was based on was called Annie. And so this whole lyric is like about Annie, are you okay? Because the whole learning how to resuscitate something came from Annie, are you okay? Like that was the whole fucking resuscitation thing.
So you're saying Annie, are you okay then? Annie,
are you
okay? Michael Jackson inspired that, or that inspired Michael Jackson?
No, it's like, there's the speaker. I'm a lifeguard.
Okay, great.
They're still called Annie.
Still so called Annie.
Like the guy.
So they've always been called Annie.
Always the lifeguards. So Kim has told us that the mannequin has always been called Annie. So the training situation is Annie, are you okay?
Yeah. So Michael might have done a test himself.
Michael had a couple of weeks off.
He had 60 quid from Christmas.
I'm going to do this course. In case one of my crew goes down.
That's it.
No, no, like mine, he's down. Michael, you got to sort this.
Yeah, that's it. At least we know Michael Jackson could have
saved lives.
Yeah, all right. Perfect time to round up the Thanks for Trying episode 13. And thank you so much to my guests, Tom Ravenscroft and Sway. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Welcome.
You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 13. Big thank you to my special guests, Sway and Tom Ravenscroft. Thank you to everyone for listening. Big shout out to Seb White for recording the show. We will return next month, as always. Do not forget, the instrumental that you're hearing is Dream McLean and the Last Skeptic doing bits, out now on Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.